Welcome to the Now Spinning Magazine podcast with me, Phil Aston. And on this episode, I'm absolutely delighted to have with me lead guitarist Carlos Cavazo, formerly from Quiet Riot, Rat, and now King Cobra. Now, King Cobra have been around, it's been nearly four decades since, I think, you know, this is a new album. It's brand new. And we are warriors. It's absolutely superb. So welcome, Carlos. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good considering our weather events yesterday. We had a tropical storm move through here. And at some point in the afternoon, there was an earthquake also.
So oh, my God.
Quite a day.
Yeah, nature's own heavy metal show.
Yes, it was. I'm doing fine.
Yeah, before we look at the new album, which is fantastic, I've been playing it nonstop for the last few days. You've been playing guitar for most of your life, what inspired you? We're going back to the 70s, I guess. What inspired you to pick up the guitar? What was it about the instrument you thought, this is me, this is what I want to do?
Well, actually, it goes back to the 60s, 1965. My dad purchased the wonderful British band, The Beatles. Who's never heard of The Beatles?
Yeah.
And ever since I heard The Beatles, I go, man, I have to do this. This looks like so much fun. They look like they're having such a great time traveling around the world, seeing the world, making money and having success and the girls chasing them and all that. And that was my influence. The Beatles got me into this. If it wasn't for The Beatles, I probably wouldn't be here right now.
Really? Wow. So when was it you started to kind of turn towards, you know, the kind of rock bands? I guess that must be like the late 60s and 70s,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yes, it was the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s when I started playing in bands. Me and my brother Tony, he played bass, I played guitar, and we met a drummer in a neighborhood that we lived in 1969.
Wow.
And we started playing back then. That was my first band, probably 68, 69.
What was the music scene like back then where you were?
Well, I wasn't playing out live. We were just playing cover tunes to some of our favorite bands and trying to imitate people and trying our best how to learn our instruments. And but we weren't performing out live yet at that point.
When did you start playing live?
I started playing live probably 1973, I believe. A friend of mine who had some parties at his house hired our band, mine and my brother's band, to play at the party. And he kind of got our career started, actually, you know.
And what kind of guitarists were you listening to in 73, 74?
Oh, God. Richie Blackmore, Michael Schenker, Alvin Lee. God, who else? Still listening to The Beatles and got all kinds of different 70s bands, Humble Pie, The Who, and a lot of British bands, you know, because there were a lot of great British bands that came in the 70s into the, you know, America and stuff.
So a lot of the guitarists that you were listening to at that point were quite blues-based, weren't they? I mean, people like Blackmore and Schenker, there was a kind of blues feel to them. And as style developed, it became more kind of, I guess where I'm going is when you arrive at like Quiet Riot and you replace Randy Rhoads, and the music guitar styles had then changed because of Eddie Van Halen, and this almost like neoclassical stuff was coming in. How were you adapting yourself to that at the time? Was that?
Well, actually, I was studying classical music. I still do. I read music. Yeah. And I like to play Spanish guitar and flamenco a little bit. And I like Renaissance Baroque and classical. I've been studying it since I was young. Back then, I was taught how to read. And I knew that 80s guitar players were applying classical techniques to their scales and their songs. And it kind of fell naturally with me, too. And it definitely was a thing in the 80s. Guitar players were leaning towards classical scales and things like that, which I love. I think it's great. I try to add in a little blues with the classical.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that because that's really interesting, do you think that gave you almost like a secret weapon, the fact that you could read music and you were studying classical compared with your contemporaries?
It's a possibility, yeah. But I know there's some people out there that are amazing players that don't read music. I was taught how to read, which is good because I can learn techniques out of books and I can learn songs that are not recorded, you know, like old songs.
Yeah, fantastic. And of course, Quiet Riot in the UK where I am, you exploded because you covered, as you're saying, talking about like the bands coming out of Britain, you covered a song by Slade, Come and Feel the right. Noise, which is amazing because Slade had gone over to the US in the 70s and they couldn't get arrested. And then you cover one of their songs and it just explodes from where you are right. over to us. Just what was that like?
The right place at the right time, yeah. I think, you know, I don't know. Well, we'll see. Our producer, Spencer Proffer, sorry to interrupt you. Our producer, yeah. Spencer Proffer, felt or thought that Kevin sounded like Noddy Holder, and he was a fan of Slade. Yeah. So he thought we record a couple of their songs to see how they come out, and obviously it came out good, so we used it.
So that you were a tremendous success with Quiet Riot, and I just want to, as I move towards King Cobra, the thing for rock music was when we entered the 90s, everything changed because of grunge and stuff, and before we had the right. internet, because obviously a lot where I was as a rock fan, it's like, where's my music gone? Where's all right. the music I love gone? Whereas, of course, when the internet arrived, we all found it again. But what was it? Was that a difficult time for you as a rock guitarist in that period for the kind of 90s?
It was. It was a tough time, I think, for all rock bands, for all the attention being given to the grunge bands and everybody just kind of throwing the rock bands to the side. I think we get a lot more respect now than we did then in the 90s. I think it's come around again, but
yeah,
it was pretty tough. It was, gigs were fewer and far between, and just, you know, one of those things that life has to throw at you, I guess.
And then fast forward a little bit, I'm going to go to this album, Infestation by Rat, to 2010. It's a great album, and obviously the way you play with Warren as well, the dual lead bits and everything. Because obviously on the new album with King Cobra, you're playing with Rowan Robinson. So playing with another lead guitarist, how do you work with that? Is it something you find really natural, really easy to do?
With Warren, when I was working with Rat, we were in the studio and we just have a discussion amongst ourselves, what solos you think we should do, which one should I do, which one should you do? And we kind of like, whatever style, like he might have a better style for this song, or I might have a better style for that song.
Yeah.
And then along with the producer, they help decide as well. But on the King Cobra record, it was a different situation. This is the first record I ever recorded in my career where you didn't go to the studio with the whole band.
Right.
Every recorded at home digitally, you know, new technology. So I just recorded everything that I heard, little clean tone, loud tone, anything that I heard. And I'd send all the files to the producer and they'd use what they want to use. And which is also another weird thing, because sometimes something that you play, they can take it and put it into another part of the song, you know,
wow.
slide it around, and which they did on one part that I did. I actually recorded this part for the verse on a King Cobra song, and they ended up using the part in the chorus. So, and it worked. I didn't say anything, but when you record with the whole band in the studio, everything is ironed out right there, and you do it right there. But in the new digital age, they can take your stuff and move it around and trick it out and do stuff, you know?
Yeah, very interesting. Because one of the tracks, One More Night, which is one of my favorites tracks off the album, is that you and Rowan, or is that you on your own or on the solos on that track?
That's both me and Rowan on the solos. The first part is Rowan and the second part is me. And sometimes they'll use like a couple licks of Rowan and throw in a lick of me and throw in a couple. It's strange, yeah. And sometimes I have a hard time figuring out, was that me or was that Rowan?
So when because on the title track, which is another one of my favorites, We Are Warriors, that's on the video, that's you playing both right. solo spots.
Yeah, I did both all the soloing on that particular song, yes.
So I'm just thinking, because when you're doing your solo bits, and you've just mentioned sometimes the producer will lift a bit and put it somewhere else.
Right.
Do you, because your solos sound really constructed, as if like you put a lot of thought into them. So are you like kind of like listening to the songs overall a lot, the lyrical content as well, to get that inspiration for the solo?
Oh, yeah. They would send me the track, the songs that they would write. They would send me the track with no solos, with the singing and everything. And I just sit around and create stuff in my head, whatever comes into my head. Sometimes it comes easy. Sometimes it doesn't. It takes hours and days, maybe. But sometimes you hear something, you know, right away and you lay it down. But yeah, I had, working at home, I had the time to really construct something, and you're not working against the clock and, you know, money and all that. So you had the time to create maybe some better stuff. And there's no pressure of everybody in the studio breathing down your neck also.
That's true.
You know, half the time I'm in my pajamas in the afternoon recording. I'll go in there in the morning and record a little bit and come out, have lunch, go back in there, record a little bit more. And it's just a bedroom in our house. We have, you know, a computer studio. That's all it is. No big studio or anything like that. But
do you, with your ability to read music, et cetera, is there still an improvisational aspect of your solo, of creating a solo, or do you write down what you're going to play, so you don't, or is it like fresh in the moment? I mean, how do you approach some of the solos?
Well, you're talking about the solos. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, I try to write something that's got some tricks into it. And a lot of times in my solos, I like to throw in everything I can. All the scratches, noises, scrapes, feedbacks, anything. Yeah. I like more is good for me. I'm a dirty player, really dirty sound. I like that. You know, I don't try to be a total clean player. You know, I try to make noises and make it rough, you know.
To make it sound really live, isn't it? It's like the second solo on the title track, when you slide your plectrum down the strings and move your hand over. It's kind of really in the moment.
And sure.
So I guess when you're planning to go out live, these are things where you're thinking, are you going to play that solo as it is, or try to, or use kind of like motifs from it?
You're right. Yeah. Sometimes you got to if you go out on the road, you got to relearn all the stuff you did. And some of it you forgot, because that's like half a year ago and all that. So you got to relearn a lot of stuff. Yeah. Sometimes it might not be exactly what you did, but close enough, I suppose.
Yeah, but it must be quite, that will be quite an adventure, won't it, where the producers lifted bits of you and put it somewhere else. It's kind of like relearning things you didn't even know had happened.
Yeah, it's almost like film, editing a film. They can put your part anywhere they want, you know, basically.
Because as you say, that's a new way of recording compared with other aspects of your career. I mean, do you feel that's, what are the positives of being able to do that? Apart from wearing your pajamas.
The positives are you can record at your own pace. You know, you don't have to get in your car and go down to Hollywood and go to a studio or anything like that. You can record when you want and do it when you want. But the negatives are there's no camaraderie with the guys in the band. It's like, you know, hey, guys, let's go have a beer and cut this track and make it killer. You know, there's none of that, you know. It's strange on that end, you know, because you're used to partying with the guys and you go in and cut a good song.
So how did the band approach writing the songs from scratch? How did the ideas come about?
Well, for those guys, the songs that they came up with, I said earlier, they sent me the track with no solos, just, you know, the rhythm guitar. And sometimes it wasn't even Rowan playing rhythm, might have been Paul or something. But they'd send me the track with just the rhythm and the singing and the drums. And I'd put everything I hear on top of it and send them the files. And for the songs that I wrote, I would do all my guitar playing, and then I'd do the bass myself, a scratch bass, and computer drums, computer drums. I'd send those guys the tracks, and then they would erase those drums, and it would be on a click track too. And yeah, Carmine would play his drums along with that. And then Johnny Rob would come in, erase the bass, and do his own bass over that.
Amazing. So which are the tracks that you were the main writer for?
I brought in like, I think, three or four songs. We're Warriors, Drowning, Dance with the Wind. I think there might have been one more. I forget now. At least three songs I brought in.
Drowning is a great track. I love that. That's another one of my favorites. Absolutely brilliant. There's a cover version on there as well, isn't there, which I know from Nazareth, and which is Love Hurts. Whose idea was it to do that track?
Actually, it was those guys before I came into the band. They had it recorded, and I loved what Rowan did on that. His guitar playing is amazing on that. The rhythms and stuff. Yeah. He did all those clean tones and stuff. I doubled the distorted tones, and the ending solo was me. The middle solo was him. But most of the rhythms are probably him. You know, I doubled the distorted, but I'm not sure how much they used. They used to probably a little bit here and there.
I mean, so your approach to songwriting is also very different. As you say, you've got, whereas go back a couple of decades, you would have all been in the room together, all jamming. Correct. And coming up with ideas. Right. But now you've also become a bit of a technician, because you're also putting down like electronic drums and almost sending a sketch of the finished article.
Exactly. Into and the they band. Put the rest of it together, right. Yeah, in the old days, I would just record on a boombox, a cassette, and record the guitar part that I had an idea of. Then I'd bring it to the guys and play it. You know, hey, what do you guys think of this? Oh, we like it. And then they'd come up with their little parts to go along with it. And then we write a song around it. But nowadays, you can put the drums in and the bass and everything. It's definitely a different technology today.
And of course, the music industry has changed such a lot as well over the decades you've been playing. And now, I mean, this album's coming out. It's out now, isn't it, I think? I don't know if it's out in the UK yet, but it's coming out on double vinyl, silver, black vinyl. I mean, how important is vinyl and the CD still to the success of being a professional musician?
I'm sorry. Guard dog at duty.
That's okay.
Elsa, you know, that was the record company's idea with all the vinyl. That's what, Cleopatra Records is into the vinyl, I guess. And I am too. I have two turntables around the house. And once in a while, I pull out vinyl records and listen to them. But that was, I think, maybe their decision. But it's a good decision. I like it. I'm all for it.
Fantastic. And there's a couple of extra tracks, I think, on the CD version, isn't there, that aren't on the vinyl, I think.
I believe so. I can't remember exactly what they did.
And it's a great album. It's a long album as well. It's a double album, I guess. Did you have more songs than you needed for the album? Was the kind of creative process really easy?
I think we did. Yeah, we had a couple songs that were held off the record, I think, two or three, I believe.
And are there plans for you to play live?
I hope so. You know, everybody's kind of so busy. I know Rowan won't be able to do it with us. He's got a lot of things going on. We'll probably use somebody else on guitar for that. But hopefully we can all get it together and do. It's a lot of work to get a band out on the road, as you probably know. But
of course.
I would do it. I would go out and do some shows with them. It would be fun. I don't know about a super long tour, but maybe some selected shows at some festivals or something like that.
Do you find because the where we are with like rock music and bands like this, it's obviously it's a real band. It's got a fantastic name and reputation, but there's a lot of, sometimes these kind of things can be like projects because all the members come together.
Sure.
It's all recorded remotely, but everyone's busy doing other things as well.
Sure. Right. So
even when you shoot the videos, were you all together then, or was that done separately?
Funny you mentioned that. Same thing with the video. Everybody lives in different states. So, you know, it was kind of like I had to go to a green screen studio, you know, and I did the video by myself. And it was a little silly, to be honest with you. I'm used to rocking out with the guys in the band on stage. But for this particular video, we had to do it this way because, you know, Carmine's in Florida, Paul Shortino's in Vegas, and Rowan, I'm not sure he lives in Vegas too, but I'm not sure if he's in England right now. But And he couldn't even do the video, but everybody's just in different places. It was easier to do it this way.
You've got to say, though, that now I know that it really hangs together really, really well.
It looks good. Yeah, they did a good job.
It really does. And you're saying about, you know, constructing your solos. I mean, the camera, obviously the camera's on you and you're trying to get into the feel of the song. And obviously it's just you and a green screen, but you obviously mime to that solo perfectly.
it was hard to get into it like that, you know.
I bet it was
you have to be a good actor, I guess.
Yeah, because with this kind of music and the, as you say, the energy, and you like to keep the guitar playing a little bit loose and dirty when you're doing that,
right?
When you're just like unplugged and you've got to mime to it, how do you put yourself in the right headspace? Are you
You gotta like, it's weird. It's weird. It is. You gotta get used to it. All the videos are done that way. You're not even really plugged in. You're just faking it, you know, but that's the way it has to be done, you know? And, even this, I didn't sing on this album, so I didn't have to worry about the vocals, but, the playing I did, but it's tough. It is.
Right. So those solo on the title track, the two solos you do, as I've already mentioned, are absolutely impeccable. So, you know,
thank you so much.
Keeping yourself, you know, fit and on top of your game after, you know, all these decades of playing music, do you practice a lot?
Oh, yeah. If I'm like recording or playing live, you have to practice a lot, because if you sit around and don't practice, you go a little stale. And then when you go out there, you run out of gas real quick, you know, halfway through the set, and you're like, you know, tired out. You got like to work out. You really got to work out. It's like it's very athletic on stage. It really is. Like when you are playing, you can get as good as you want in your living room, but when you go out there with the band, it's a whole different game. Everybody's exerting way more energy and more, you know, enthusiasm and power. It's like, you got to be in shape. You literally have to work out, you know, and maybe ride a bike, work out, you know, jumping jacks, push-ups, and play every day as well. Work out your arm and finger muscles and stuff.
And you're playing on the video, you're playing a Gibson Flying V. Is that right. Your kind of weapon of choice now, or is it, or is that, or do you have a variety of guitars that you like to use?
I usually use Gibsons and Jacksons. I'm lucky enough to have an endorsement with Gibson and Jackson as well. I've had it through most of my career, except for Gibson, just in the last 10 years or so. But they're treating me really good, and I like their stuff. I've always used Gibsons, and what got me more into the Flying Vs was Rat. When I came to rehearse with them one day, I brought a Flying V down, and they go, "Oh, we like you with that. Stay with that guitar." So ever since then, I've been kind of sticking with them. But Quiet Riot, I would play, you know, Strat bodies and Flying V bodies and Les Pauls and SGs and stuff like that. But I've always been a fan of Flying Vs for sure. They suit me well, and it fits me very well.
Yeah, certainly. Do you find that easier to kind of play the kind of like the, you know, when you're playing the really speed kind of driven solos? Right. Do you find the Flying V kind of lends itself to that in your style?
It does, because the frets are maybe not quite as far apart as some guitars, but there's no tremolo bar, so you got to be really good on your vibrato. You know, everything you got to do with your hand instead of a bar. Elsa, please stop.
That's okay. That's a good point, because obviously in the 80s, the tremolo arm was used so much for all the dive bombing and stuff. And so Flying V, was that like a bit of a culture shock in how it become part of your playing style, not having the tremolo arm?
It was in the early days. I used to always play with a tremolo guitar. But it is different without the tremolo. If you want to do like for instance, in one of those songs, come here, girl. One of those songs that Secrets and Lies, I did a thing which sounds like, here, want to say hi to everybody?
Yeah.
Got a beautiful Rottweiler right here.
Yeah, beautiful.
But I did, on Secrets and Lies, I just did a bunch of crazy stuff without the bar, but I tried to make it sound like I had, I didn't, sorry about that. Elsa,
that's all right. That's okay. That's another great track as well. I love Darkness. Lies. I love Dance. That's another brilliant track.
Elsa,
did you find the ideas for writing? You know, this is a great rock metal album. It's part of the King Cobra lineage, fits in really well. Did you find when you're writing your own kind of material that went into this, was it easy to do? Did it just come naturally?
It kind of did, because my style is 80s kind of style, and my writing is like 80s, you know. I think we wanted to have like an 80s heavy metal blues-based record, and I think that's what we came out with. It sounds good to me, but I think we hit it out of the ballpark as far as that, you know.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Of course, who produced it? Because obviously it's a great production, and obviously the drums sound great, which the band
did. That's Pat Reagan. Pat Reagan production. Yeah,
oh,
Pat
really?
Reagan's a great. Yeah, Pat Reagan. And actually, he's the guy who played piano on the first Quiet Riot record. He played piano on Thunderbird. That's Pat Regan. Yeah, he did the session for us. He played piano on like two songs, or keyboards in two songs or so.
Yeah, because his name pops up everywhere, doesn't he? He's worked with
Deep Purple. Yeah, he's a great producer. I like him a lot. He's a great producer. Working with all these guys is great. Working with Carmine's great. The guy's like a rock legend. He's an American national treasure. The guy's played with some amazing artists, and he's been around for a long time. And playing with Paul, he's an amazing player. And Rowan, he's great as well. When they invited me to do it, it was a no-brainer because I've worked with all these people before and they're all easy to work with, no egos, no drama. And I jumped on the chance to work with these guys. And I would have probably played maracas on the record if they told me.
Because you've played with, well, obviously Carmine's been around a long time. Were you almost like when you were growing up and first getting into bands, were bands like Vanilla Fudge and Cactus, were they on your radar?
They were Cactus, for sure. Cactus. I used to buy their records and Beck Bogart Apathy. I bought that record. That's a great record. Carmine's a great singer. He did good vocals on those records. He sang all the harmonies on the new record.
He did.
Yeah, I didn't sing. Actually, this is the first record I never sang on. All the vocals were done by Paul and Carmine.
Oh, that's interesting. So it must be like almost like a dream come true, really, to sing.
Yeah, it is. It is. I've never recorded with Carmine before, but I've done a lot of shows with him, performances and stuff. And I've done a few records with Paul, and love working with him.
So are there plans to do another video if you can't do any gigs or what's now the album's out? I mean,
we would do that if the record company wants us to do another video. We would gladly do that. And we're hoping to do some shows. We'll see what happens in the near future here.
Are you working on any other projects? Alongside this?
Actually, I was. I got a call from the band Freak Show.
Oh, yeah.
The band that Jeff LaBar was working with before he passed away. He played with Cinderella.
Yes, in the 80s.
And they had contacted me through my wife on the internet and asked me if I could help him finish the record because he had passed away and couldn't do it, obviously. So I said, yeah, send me the music. Let me hear it. And it sounded really good. I like the music. So I did, did what I could do with it. And same way of recording again, send them all the files. And they had that record's coming out probably in another 6 months or 3 months or so.
And have you ever thought about doing anything on your own?
I have many times, but it seems like other people call me up before I get a chance to do something on my own. But nevertheless, I'm still writing all the time. But I'd like to do an instrumental guitar record with some nylon string guitaring on it and, electric, a little bit of everything that I can do,
So you probably even bring in some classical guitar and also some quite different stuff. Yeah. Everything that makes you who you are. Yeah.
I've always tried to sneak in a little classical nylon on a lot of records. There's a couple of Quiet Riot records where I did a nylon solo, and I tried to do one on this record, but they didn't like it too much, so we got erased.
And as you say, you haven't sung on this one. That's the first one you've not sang on. Is that something you loved? You like singing as much as playing the guitar?
I'm not that into singing, but it's okay. I like it. I'm more of a background singer. I'm not a lead singer, obviously. Yeah. But this is the first record I never sang on. Every other record I ever did, I've sang backgrounds on. Honestly, I didn't miss it, to be honest with you.
Do you feel your guitar style has developed over the, through the 80s and 90s and 2010s? Do you feel that you're constantly moving forwards as a musician and guitarist?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I think I'm a lot better than I was in the 80s. I'm constantly, like I said, I'm reading out of books. And, I'm reading out of books, technique books and classical books, and always learning. You never stop learning in this business, in guitar. There's always something to learn.
Do you think that keeps you at the forefront, that you're constantly pushing yourself to learn something new? You're looking forwards rather than backwards, as a player and a musician.
I would hope so. I would hope so. It keeps me up there. I try to do that, but it's up to the people to decide, I guess.
No, I think the solos, I think it's fascinating that you said that some of the solos were like dissected and plopped in at different places because it sounds so well constructed. I love the guitar sound as well that you have.
Thank you.
I understand there is obviously a the more modern sounding influences as well, but I can hear like things like Ronnie Montrose in some of the lower end.
Great influence. I like Ronnie.
Really? I can feel it in some of the tone that you have.
I was definitely influenced by him. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what other players of you would you say?
Oh God! What else is there? Who else? I liked Nazareth. They were great. Manny Charlton. He was great.
God,
who else? With all the British bands, you know, Judas Priest, you know, and Def Leppard. All those guys are great. Probably more influenced by 70s guys, you know. Can't even think of them right now.
Because your solos have a lot of melody in them, and though you're saying you like the dirty aspect of like,
I try to put in a lot of melody,
a lot of melody
with a little bit of flash, a little bit of noise. I try to throw in a little bit of everything if I can. You know?
That's fantastic. So the album is out now. It's King Cobra and it's We Are Warriors. It's well worth listening to. It's real classic 80s metal album. Some really powerful tracks, great playing on it. So for those of you watching this, you want to go and buy a vinyl copy or a CD copy, don't just stream it. You know, support the musicians and buy a real copy. It's fantastic. That's important. Well, thank you very much, Carlos, for your time today. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you,
Phil. Really, really good. And I wish you all the best with the album and any other projects you're working on. So, you know, stay in touch and it would be great to talk to you again. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if we come out to England and do a performance, we'd love to hook up with you.
Yeah, that would be great. So take care, Carlos. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Phil.
A huge thank you to my guest, Carlos Cavazo, lead guitarist with King Cobra. The album is called We Are Warriors, and it's out now, and it's highly recommended. Please check out the website at nowspinning.co.uk and also subscribe to the podcast on whatever your favorite platform is. We are on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, YouTube podcasts, and of course, there's a YouTube channel as well. And we have a Facebook private group. We are everywhere. You can become a patron if you want to support us more, or a YouTube member, or even make a donation via Ko-fi. Thank you so much for your support. And remember, music is the healer and the doctor. So keep spinning those discs, and I shall see you on my next episode.